Welcome to Booked, a game of parody, skill, guesswork and low-grade playground showing off. Booked is best described as a literary parlour game. And you know what used to happen in the parlour? It was never used till it was time to bring out the dead. And so our panel today, Miles Kington, as far as we know, the only bass player and former member of Instant Sunshine who's funny every day in The Independent. And with Miles is Dilly Keane, actor, writer, singer, sailor, member of Fascinating Aida, Renaissance woman, in fact, straight back from Singapore. And competing for the Whitbread Prize, that's two cans and a bar towel, are Roger McGough, stand-up poet from the time when most poets sat down. Roger McGough is the only poet everybody's heard of, and if I could choose Poet Laureate, it'd be him. And with him, Mark Thomas, stand-up comic and one of the founder members of London's hard-hitting, cutting-edge show at the Comedy Store, and has been described by The Guardian as an iconoclastic boot boy, which The Guardian always says about people who are cleverer than them. And now we've got through the title, the half-title, the preface and the contents, it's time for the first round. Each panellist will find a pack of cards in front of them. Each card has written upon it the name of a literary object, like Pinky's razor from Brighton Rock or Perky's shaving brush from Blackpool Tower. All you've got to do is describe the object without using real names so the others guess it. If you get stuck, you can pass on one and you've only got a minute, and Miles and Dilly start now.
It's played by the Bard of Avon in a big storm, island...
And the Tempest.
Magician waving his...
magic wand.
Yeah, belonging to...
De Prospero's magic wand. This is an object that you make cloth on, and it's
loom.
A warp and weft. It's two words. Yes?
Weaving.
Yes.
Weaving machine.
And it belongs to a George Eliot hero.
Oh,
or not a hero.
Mill on the floss on the loom. Dental floss.
It sounds like a sailor. The second word sounds like the word for a sailor.
Pass.
Mariner.
Pass. Right. Fairy tale.
30 seconds.
Young maiden, apparently dead. Wicked stepmother looking into her...
Mirror.
Yes.
The next one is, they were worn cross-gartered and they were a sort of daffodil colour, and in a Shakespeare play, and is a character called...
Buttons, no.
No.
5 seconds.
Strings, ribbons.
No, and round the legs.
Round the legs. Socks, stockings.
That's it, time's up.
Oh.
What was it?
Miles Berlioz, yellow stocking.
You got several right there. Right, Roger Mark, off you go now.
It's a receptacle that a woman would have for putting things in, like a green carnation she might keep in it.
She might keep a green carnation
as a clue, a literary clue. In this receptacle.
In a handbag?
Yes,
a handbag.
Yes.
So it's, what's her name, from Oscar Wilde thing? Havisham? No. Irene. Posh woman.
Near Sussex. Near Sussex. Yes.
Sort of near Sussex. Horsham.
Place.
I don't know.
Rhymes with Bracknell. Rhymes with Bracknell.
Oh, Lady Bracknell.
Lady Bracknell's handbag, yes.
Yeah, all right, here we go. Pantomime, this bloke had it and a genie jumped out when he rubbed it.
London's lamp.
Yep.
Lamp.
Yes.
Sure, oh, so my God, so it is, mate. This is a very sweet substance that
honey.
Bees, yes,
honey.
Someone who has a honey, who likes
Winnie
honey.
The Pooh. Winnie
yes,
the Pooh, honey.
Pooh is jar of honey.
Right, young lad, he was 13 and 3 quarters and he used to write in it every day.
Adrian's diary, Adrian Mole's
15
diary.
15 seconds.
And this is, the county we're in, very close to now.
10 seconds.
Gloucester.
Yes.
Gloucester.
Is what he looks out of. His mincers.
His eyes.
Yes,
so
Gloucester's eyes. Yes.
This is a detective, and he's French detective.
Poirot.
Yeah, and he's got something which...
Poirot's bowler.
No.
He makes his moustache, twirls his moustache with.
He might do, but one of it's sort of like made out of the stuff that's in the middle of your what's it?
Monocle.
Yeah.
Glass.
No, that's the one.
It's glass.
Yeah, something to do with that.
Well,
it's
magnifying
glass.
There.
I don't know what it is. What on earth is that?
It's tisane glass. What he drinks tisane, tea out of.
Oh, it's tisane glass?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
His mug.
It's Hercule Poirot's.
It was Hercule Poirot's mug. Good Lord.
And he was Belgian, too.
And he's Belgian, me.
But it's a literary quiz. So, the next round. We gave the panellists a book title, and they had to write New Beginnings and Endings, which parody the writer or the book. And this is the kind of game they used to play in the war when the lights went out, so if you're playing at home, smash the windows and turn the lights out. Roger, we gave you the Miller's Tale by Geoffrey Chaucer, a bawdy romp in rhyming couplets involving buttocks, windows and red-up pokers. Just your average Friday night in Brown Hills. So, what have you done with it, Roger?
Well, I kept away from the last three. Pop music weareth many faces. I'm talking blur, take that, Oasis. bands that flareth overnight, then fade away at dawn's first light. Their songs of angst and puzzled rage, blips in the narcissistic age, where every prepubescent fan has a 15-second attention span. It was not ever thus. For in a far-off land during the Second World War, a band was led by a man we now shall hail. Here beginneth Glenn Miller's tale. And then there are 15 pages of wonderful sort of robust sort of poetry, the sort of stuff you and I do very well, Ian. Mm-hmm. And then it ends up the end of the Miller's tale. In the mood, little brown jug, lads with their lasses did jitterbug. Bugle call rags, St. Louis blues, doughboys are bopping in blue suede shoes. Chattanooga choo-choo, chat and romance, getting very pally in the pally to dance. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Unless I'm killed in action, then feel free to marry when Johnny comes marching home. String of pearls in the moonlight glow, Pennsylvania 65000, that foggy night you never should have flown, but stayed inside with your slide trombone. And Benny Goodman on the clarinet, and Gene Krupa on the drum, and God bring us all to kingdom come.
Miles, we gave you Little House on the Prairie by Laura Ingalls Wilder, a tale of plucky family life on the Wild West frontiers.
Miles. Okay, this is the opening, Little House on the Prairie. Mother, why do we live in this horrible little house on the prairie? I asked my mother one day. Have you ever heard of something called negative equity, said Mother. Isn't that a union for actors who never get any work? No, my child, it means that the house is worth less than what we paid for it. But, Mother, we didn't buy it. Father built it. That's another reason we can't sell it, said my mother. He forgot to put any foundations in it. Is that why we now call the sitting room the basement? Yes, my child, but cheer up. Some people are coming to look around the house with a view to buying it. They sent word to say they left Baltimore 2 days ago, so they should be here by Christmas. She sighed and looked out of the window. A storm was brewing. A little girl was blown past overhead, holding a dog, crying, Toto, Toto! In the yard, my father picked up his gun and fired at her, but missed. We wouldn't be having dog for dinner tonight. Well, that sets the scene, and this is the ending. And how was Baltimore when you left it, said my mother, opening the door, ushering the two people in. That was 3 years ago, said the man. Well, where is it, said the woman. Where's what, said my mother. The horse. My mother and I looked at each other. What horse? The one in the ad. Look, I've got the paper here. For sale, little horse on the prairie. Well, there's been a misprint, said my mother. It's a little house we're selling. House, said the woman. We've got a house already. Come on, Phineas, this has been a complete waste of time. They set out on the long walk back to Baltimore again. My father mistook them for missionaries in the gloom and shot at them both. He missed. Winter set in again. I secretly decided to burn the house down as soon as possible, but more of that in my next book, The Little Insurance Scandal on the Prairie.
Now, Mark, you've got Undermilt Wood, A Day in the Life of Llarigub, which is, bugger all backwards, a mythical Welsh town modelled on Dylan Thomas's own Lar.
It's actually a play for voices, which I think is a brilliant poem, but shouldn't be read out loud in a warm room in comfy chairs. So this is under the first line of Undermilt Wood, Dylan Thomas. Listen. Listen to the sighs of the dank dark dog bark, wet fart birthmark, cream tart, dart sharp basking shark, stark heart start hair part park, hark to the sounds of a snoring village. No plot. Well, not a lot. Not a lot of plot. The plot got the chop. So shop for plot, but not a lot you'll spot. You may cop a dot of plot. For the plot we got sticks out plain as plip-plop in a yoghurt pot. Some of it might not rhyme either. And the last line. And when I count to three, you will all awaken and pretend you have understood every word.
Dilly, your book was one of D.H. Lawrence's lesser-known works, The Lost Girl. It tells the story of a woman who, in typically Laurentian style, rebels against ordinariness by wearing a knickers outside a frock and starts an affair with a vaudeville actor and follows him to Italy.
The Italian stood for a moment in the lee of the smokestack. Taut muscles rippled beneath his singlet, and light beads of perspiration glistened in the afternoon sun. As he glanced up, he glimpsed young Margareta, gazing at him from her father's office, her full bosom straining against the filmy gauze of her fichu. Their eyes met momentarily. She blushed, then running forward to the window, threw open the sash and cried, "In here, big boy!" And the end. some while later. "What does it matter, Arturo?" said Margie, savouring the musty smell of manhood that enveloped her. "If my father has disinherited me, we have our love." Arturo's eyes glistened manfully.
"Disinherited, eh? You did not tell me this, eh? I gotta go talk to the boys."
"But Arturo," said Margie. But Arturo was gone. Tears of rage brimmed in Margie's eyes, and she gripped her handbag in fury. "Coal miners," she thought, "they're all the same. I'll have my revenge. I'll privatize all of them, and then I'll close them down."
Now the round we call sound effects. We're going to play you a wall of sound, and you've got to deconstruct it brick by brick and tell us the book title the various sound components make up. They're like cryptic crossword clues, so listen carefully, because all the sounds will give you clues. Roger and Mark, listen to this one.
Time's arrow.
Yes.
Very good.
How did you get it so fast?
Well, because the bloke was talking backwards and there's a clock.
And an arrow.
Because time's arrow is about time going backwards.
Right, Miles and Dilly, here's one for you.
Mirror, mirror, on the wall, who is the fairest of them all?
I think that's a hard one.
Well, it's a mirror, mirror, and lots of water, so it's to do with Robert Maxwell drowning.
It was a fire.
It was a fire. It wasn't water.
So it's to do with Robert Maxwell
bonfire
burning.
The bonfire of the vanities.
Yes, it was.
Bonfire of the vanities.
Yes. Well, you were about to get that, weren't you, Miles?
I was. I was going to name that very book, but with a different title.
Another few, Roger and Matt. This is almost the whole story with a clever literal clue. See if you can spot it. Almost the whole story.
Hello? Hello? Hier wo? Hello? Hier wo?
A year in Provence?
So you heard some funeral bells.
Oh, yes. It's a funeral bell.
Les Miserables? Les Miserables?
No, then there was somebody knocking on the window.
And saying, who's there?
Yeah, but where were they knocking from? There's the question.
I don't know.
They weren't inside.
Were they outside?
They were.
So outsiders knocking on the window saying, who are you? Or where are they? In French. I've got it.
Yeah, there you go.
Come on.
No,
how many...
I don't know what you're talking about.
We're not in France.
We're not in France. Oh, but we're speaking French.
We are.
We're not in France, but we're speaking French. Evening classes.
Yes.
Frenchman's Creek.
Tahiti.
Tahiti, yes. It's the nuclear tests.
Algeria.
Oh, we're in Algeria. Oh, it's... I know what that is.
The plague.
Yeah.
Five go mad in Paris.
No, the what's name? The outsider.
The Outsider.
Ah,
damn it. Well done.
He's a terror, he's a terror, Mark.
Obvious, weren't it? Triumph over tragedy. Miles and Dilly, this is the whole story. What do you think, then?
What do you think, Dilly?
Well, there were Indians and pigs and horns at sea.
There were some falling rocks as well.
Falling rocks, avalanche.
Well, and a plane crash.
Was it
BBC News. Unless it's Lord of the Flies.
Yes.
Ooh.
I'd actually written down War and Peace.
Mind you, in this round, unlikely literary characters from different novels bump into each other, like a night out in Hampstead. And we've asked our guests to imagine what they'd say. It could be Frankenstein meeting Porter and Pat saying, "I could have done a much better nose than that, Patrick." So, Miles, who bumped into whom for you?
Well, a most unlikely pair. I've got Richard III on the eve of the Battle of Bosworth Field and Eeyore.
Fair enough.
A horse, my kingdom for a horse.
I don't suppose you were looking for a donkey, were you?
A horse, no less can save me now.
You know, donkey's very good in its own way.
An ass, my kingdom for an ass. Is that the kind of line a king should say? I had as lief not send out for a donkey.
All right, I only offered. I only said, would you care for a donkey? I only said, would you like me to save your life? But no, you wouldn't listen to old Eeyore. Here you are, about to lose everything, and all you can say is...
a horse, my kingdom for a horse.
It's so mortifying. My trouble is I'm in the wrong plot. Now, if only I'd been in the Bible, I'd be all right. Jesus would come along and say, a donkey, next world for a donkey. And I'd step forward and say, hello, hello, can I help you? You palm fronds all the way after that, but no. All I get is a day trip to Bosworth Field and a homeless king saying over and over again...
All right, I'll take the wretched ass. But charge thee, donkey, if thou ever speak'st of how thy liege bestrode thy lowly back. With my bare bodkin I'll thy quietus make... Oh, look, here comes the number 51.
Roger, who are your unlikely pair?
Mine was Stig of the Dump. And the Jabberwock, you know, Stig of the Dump, who lived underground, sort of a caveman little figure. And he meets the Jabberwock deep in a tulgey wood. Whiffle, whiffle, burble, burble, I am the Jabberwocky King. I eat slidey toves for breakfast. What's your name, kid?
Stig.
You mean... you mean the singer?
No, not Sting, Stig.
Ah, not another mimsy St. George, not another Beamish Jack. I'm feeling uffish, so I'll gorge and have you for a snicker snack.
No.
Then I'll gimble through the wabe until I come to Wonderland, where I'll smash the looking glass and ask young Alice for her hand.
Her hand?
Yes, I'll eat that first, and then the rest. O frabjous day, Kalu Calais, of all the beasties, I'm the best. And now, my little mome wrath, I'm going to gobble you up. What do you say to that?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Stig.
Stig who?
Stig this up your backseat.
Ah!
Really?
On to you, Dilly.
Well, we had Adam, before the fall meeting, Madame de Merteuil from Les Liaisons Dangereuses.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello. This is a very beautiful apple tree.
Yes, I suppose it is. I'd never really thought about it before.
Tell me, are these apples good to eat?
Oh, we don't eat them. Oh, goodness, no, we don't.
Mais pourquoi pas?
Well, God says.
Oh, zut alors, sacrebleu, oh la la. And who is this God?
Well, oh, you got me there. He's God, that's all. He's sort of absentee landlord. Let us live here rent-free. Just don't eat the apples, that's the only condition. Otherwise, he says I'll fall.
Tell me, who is that beautiful young woman?
Oh, that's old Eva, is.
She's your lover, yes?
Good heavens, no, absolutely not. No, sir, rebobs your... No, nothing of that sort going on here. Oh, no.
So she's a virgin, so much the better. But surely you wish to seduce her, no? Such a prize, such a delicious morsel, like an apple on the tree, ripe for plucking.
I don't follow you.
Like a cornfield awaiting the reaper. She is young and in bloom. Do you not wish to whisper sweet nothings in her ear? To nurture her name on your stick? to add her to what I am sure must be a long list of conquests.
I'm sorry, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Good heavens, man, what do you think your trouser snake is for? Okay, let's try a different tack. Why don't you and I eat this apple together, handsome?
No, thank you.
Oh, why will you not eat my apple?
It's simple, they're French. They're golden, delicious, nasty, woolly things imported from France by the truckload. No offence meant, but they're completely ruining Kentish apple farmers. Fancy a fig instead?
And finally, Mark, who's your odd couple?
Well, my odd couple is Captain Haddock from Tintin and Oedipus. And they meet at a self-help group. And in it, Roger is Oedipus, and I am the good captain.
Blistering barnacles, you did what?
Shame heap its rancid soul upon mine head that I should twice visit this sacred place, once as a babe and once a man. Oh, that such a bed of joyful peace should prove so vile a torturer's rack, so rotten a union mouldy with guilt, so diseased a kiss.
Thundering typhoons! I've known plenty of sailors love their mothers, and you know what they do? They get a tattoo saying, Mum! A man and a member of his own family, duplicitous dolphins! Snowy, quick, fetch help!
Oh, that fate's fearful caress had led me to this accidental coupling.
With lashing whelks! You mean to tell me that you stowed away on your own mother's craft by accident? Good Lord, you were passing her bedroom naked, slipped on a piece of soap and landed in her crow's nest?
If only the truth were as plain as you, then I would not ache with torment, tear my heart, beat my chest in agony.
Will you stop waving your arms out? You'll have somebody's eye out.
Let them be plucked that I might wander blind and shunned, hounded by the Furies.
Never mind the Furies. If your dad finds out, he's going to kill you.
Right, that's enough unlikely meetings for one day. This next round is simple enough. In this round, we've asked a smattering of articulate and literary members of the public to describe a book. All the panel have to do is tell us the title. That's the easy bit. But be warned, the people we spoke to didn't always remember the stories that well. Miles and Dilly first.
Very important piece of work, changed the idea of the novel.
I like the main character. You really identify with him, don't you?
John Lennon's killer said this book influenced him.
Lonely boy coming to terms with a lonely world.
And he had a friend who used to, like, eat his snot, didn't he? Oh, no, it wasn't his nose. He used to pick his spots, that was it. And he used to flick them. I remember, this was in the book.
So?
If an American was influenced by it, and it was about a lonely boy, is it the Salinger book, The Catcher in the Rye?
Yes, it is.
Oh. Oh.
The Catcher in the Rye, yeah. Roger and Mark.
It's the sound of bells, church bells everywhere.
And a great sense of period, of the sort of things that posh people used to do in those days.
It was a really good film, and it had sort of proper English actors in.
The main actress was a stripper in another film, which was quite good.
And there's a guy there with his father.
And the man and the son go out and pick armfuls of these flowers.
And there's a girl there with her aunt.
And when the ladies come home, they're draped all over their bedroom.
And it's really about the relationship between them.
Right then.
Not the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
No.
And flowers everywhere.
Flowers everywhere. Flowers and bells.
And it was a really good film with proper English actors.
With proper English actors?
Yeah, that's
so that's not Kenneth Branagh and Emma Thompson. Right. Oh, yeah, hush my mouth.
Must be Alan Bates.
Miles and Dilly, what do you reckon? The people in the audience trying to give you some help, but...
Flowers and bells, it's beer and whiskey.
Hang on a second, I think it's coming. Room with a View?
Well done! You can't cheat in a literary quiz, can you, Miles?
No.
Like this one for you two, Miles and Dilly, is very tense.
I thought, this is a book that is going to be good for me.
Well, I didn't read the book because it failed my inch and a half test.
It's a long book. It's very cold and harsh.
planet. There's a young woman who has access to this institution in order to gain food.
They lived harshly.
Wonderful artistry, you know, I mean, the things that are created in this place.
She has sex with whoever's there.
On one level, it's just like a whodunit.
It's all about libraries.
They did treat each other harshly as well.
It was almost surreal.
I mean, there's murders in it as well, you know, I mean, there's everything.
So it's all there.
Is it The Handmaid's Tale?
No.
Oh, well, that's me stumped.
It's something to... Having sex in libraries is... Can't be many books like that.
What about the wonderful artistry and craftsmanship and the inch and a half test? Which often adds up to the same thing, doesn't it? Medieval?
Oh, it's not in Umberto, is it?
It is Umberto.
Echo.
It is Umberto. Sorry.
The thing of the rose.
Name of the rose.
The name of the rose.
Name of the rose. Yes, it is.
For many years, I thought Umberto Eco was an Italian evening paper, and I didn't.
Finally, Mark and Roger.
It was part of my youth.
Is it still politically correct to talk about that, I suppose? I don't know. No, I never actually read.